And we continue with our special report tonight on this situation with the United Arab Emirates wanting to lease 6 U.S. ports by purchasing a British company. Up next, then, will be Jerome Corsi, specialized author of several books. Of course, he's been on this program before. Go to his website, atomiciran.com. We will get his perspective next on this situation at Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Jerome Corsi received a PhD from Harvard University in political science. He has written many books and articles. He's an expert on political violence and terrorism. In 1981, he received a top secret clearance from the Agency for International Development, where he assisted in providing anti-terrorism hostage survival training to embassy personnel. In 2005, Dr. Corsi helped found and launch the Iran Freedom Foundation, a not-for-profit educational and charitable organization established to educate the public about the Islamic Republic of Iran and to promote freedom in the region. He's our ghost. He's our guest. Well, at least I hope you're not a ghost on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jerome. How are you?
Great, George. Great honor to be back with you. Thank you.
And Jerry, first of all, there is a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment coming because of this. We just heard Howard Bloom saying he doesn't even want any Muslims to work on ports at all. Is that a little too much? Is that too extreme?
It's probably too extreme, George, but, you know, every time you see the pictures of the riots over these cartoons and the people in the streets, I mean, it makes you think these are not the people I want living next door. And the Islamic world's going to have to understand that there's going to be a level of credibility and behavior that's going to have to be demonstrated before Americans, for sure, are going to really comfortably accept Muslims. And that's just a fact. I mean, it's a reality. I don't think Americans want this kind of fear and terror.
I'm beginning to sense, though, an incredible feeling of high strangeness in this entire situation. I mean, with what happened with the cartoons, the Dick Cheney shooting episode, though it has nothing to do with this, pops up at a weird time. An accident, no doubt. But, I mean, all this stuff, including this, is just strange. I mean, and even the president, as you write in your article, shooting himself basically in the foot over this entire situation. The timing for all of these things, Jerry, to me is very peculiar.
Well, you've got a good point. You know, George, I write that this is really a Harriet Myers moment for the president. I mean, you know, he's really made a mistake here of judgment, the administration has at least, that did not have to be made. This issue of Dubai could have been vetted more thoroughly in the White House or in the Department of Treasury, could have been brought to Congress. There is a 45-day period that this law calls for that could be reviewed by Congress. That ought to be exercised right now. But instead, George Bush is taking the extreme position that he's going to veto any legislation that comes out of Congress, and that's defiant, just like he was initially on the Harriet Myers affair. So I don't think it's really a smart policy in the administration. And it bothers me also, George, with what's going on with Iran right now and Iran's ties with Dubai, which I don't think the public is really fully enough aware of.
All right, tell us about that.
Well, Dubai has been a country that has invited the Iranian investment. It's very close to Iran, as you know, and they've just put up a welcome here sign for Iranians to put their money. Now, the mullahs, which have stolen money, these clerics who rule Iran, they've stolen millions and millions of dollars from the Iranian people.
Millions or billions?
Billions. I mean, Rafsanjani, their former prime minister, is a billionaire, legitimately established billionaire, and he owns whole resorts in Dubai.
So what they do, take oil money personally? They had to. That's their really only form of income, I guess. And then they just kept it for themselves?
You've got it, George. They nationalized the Iranians nationalized their oil industry. They get $200 million a day. The average person in Iran is living at about $2,000 a year. The country is really destitute because of this. And the mullahs, the clerics who rule the country, take the money. It's like a criminal mafia.
It's like, what, 75 people?
About 75 people, George, and they, you know, they have put their money and their families into great wealth, many of them with, you know, elaborate vacation homes in Dubai. There's something like 300,000 Iranians living in Dubai.
And
right
I guess with that kind of income stream, Jerry, you can buy a lot of military's favors, right?
Well, that's exactly right, George. That's where their nuclear technology is getting funded. You know, their new president, Ahmadinejad, who says that Israel ought to be wiped off the map, he said he was going to redistribute some of this oil money to the people of Iran. It has not happened. The mullahs are just getting richer by the day. And Dubai has extended, there's over 7,000 Iranian businesses established in Dubai. And if we're going to go for sanctions against Iran, because they're non-compliant with their nuclear program, that's what Secretary Rice wants to do, taking Iran to the Security Council. Are we also going to impose sanctions on Dubai? Because a lot of their wealth, it's kind of like their escape hatch. If Iran ever gets attacked, you're going to find a lot of the mullahs running away to Dubai before, you know, the military hardware starts flying on them.
The president says that the Emirates are important to us. They've been military friends for us. They allow our ships, our U.S. warships in the area. They allow us to use bases there. We need them, and we need their favors. Is that a pretty accurate statement?
Well, I think it's all one-sided, because there's another side to the picture, George. What's happened is the United Arab Emirates also was one of two countries in the Middle East to recognize the Taliban in Afghanistan. They actually had a ministry there.
Well, like double agents then.
Right. I mean, it's been fully documented. Dubai has acted as a bank for al-Qaeda. Two of the 9/11 people who took the airplanes, hijackers, including one who flew the plane into one of the two in the World Trade Center, came from Dubai, from the United Arab Emirates. They've operated with Hamas. They've, you know, it's been documented. They helped get money out of the United States through bogus Islamic charities that ultimately ended up with Hamas, the radical Islamic terrorist group that now has control of the Palestinian parliament, and also sworn to the destruction of Israel. So Dubai has got a very, very mixed record of having worked with terrorists. And, of course, you know, they're in bed with the mullahs of Iran, who are supporting Hezbollah, are now going to provide financial assistance to Hamas when Israel, the European Union, and the United States have all said we will cut off all money to Hamas. Iran said, that's fine, we'll take care of it. These same mullahs are, you know, banking in Dubai, buying property, establishing businesses, putting their families in vacation homes, and Dubai is doing that openly.
Let me ask you this, Jerry. Is there someone in government or groups of people in government, our government, that have a financial relationship with the United Arab Emirates?
Well, George, always an excellent question. It's follow the money. If you take a look at Secretary Snow, one of his companies before he became Secretary of Treasury, CRX, and a lot of the truckers driving tonight, they're going to know the company because it's a trucker container company. He owned part of that company. He sold it to Dubai Ports World. One of the top executives of Dubai Ports World, a guy named David Sanborn, who graduated from the Maritime Academy, has been appointed by President Bush just recently to be the Maritime Administrator under Secretary Mineta in the Department of Treasury. Now, these ties need to be investigated. And I'm sure if you follow the money, you're going to find a lot of ties between this Dubai Ports World, which, by the way, George, is 100% owned by the Dubai government. It is not a private company. It's just a front for the Dubai government.
Of course, and the Dubai government could be just that one family, the Maktoum family, right?
Precisely. It's the sheikh who established, it's the chief emirate in the United Arab Emirates.
Are they the ones who are always at the Kentucky Derby? It's the same family, isn't it?
It's the same family.
All right.
And they're Arabs again, you know, as opposed to the Iranians who are Persians. I mean, these are distinctions, but they are Arabs like Saudi Arabia.
All right. So we've got this situation where they are buying this company from the Brits for $6+ billion.
Correct.
Why? Why does this company, first of all, this British company, why do they want to sell out?
Well, I'm sure they've got their reasons for that amount of money. I'm sure they're making a great deal selling out. Now, you got to realize that this money is being put up by Barclays Bank and Deutsche Bank, and it's entirely leveraged. In other words, there's no real capital going into this except for loans that these banks are arranging. They're able to arrange almost $7 billion in loans because the ultimate debtor here is the United Arab Emirates, which has an A1 credit rating by Moody's.
So they're basically guaranteeing the repayment of this $7 billion loan.
That's right. You know, George, you and I ought to establish a company to do this and have the United States government guarantee us, and we'll borrow the $7 billion.
I'm not sure if I had $7 billion, I'd want to buy ports.
Well, I know, but I'm saying this is a government action.
I'd buy the Detroit Red Wings and the Pistons. That's what I'd want. Gosh.
That's what's going on. It's a government-guaranteed loan into a government Dubai company, which is running our ports, and it has a mixed history of having worked with terrorists, including Al-Qaeda, the exact guys involved in the 9/11 plot, and it's continuing those relationships even today. You know, Dubai recently on this cartoon thing said, well, the cartoons just show a clash of civilizations. It did not condemn the Muslims rioting in the streets and burning down Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises. I mean, this is ridiculous.
I can't wait to see the most current approval rating poll by the president, because I have a feeling it's going to be way down.
Well, not only down in the public in general, but, I mean, among his own base, conservatives in America, the Republican Party, this is just, you know, disastrous for the Republican Party going into the 06 off-year election.
You know, we were one of the first to talk about this story last week, and then it was picked up finally 2 days later, Jerry, by the mainstream media. WorldNet Daily also had this story. I think, you know, one of the reasons why it has probably caught on is it is such a poor public relations story. But the big question is did they expect this to get approved without anybody knowing about it?
Well, it is preposterous, isn't it, George? And, you know, the other thing is George Bush evidently did not even know about it until it hit the public.
He says.
Now, but, you know, either way, it's bad. If he didn't know about it, why not? He was asleep at the switch. And if he did know it, then, you know, it was ridiculous not to think that this story was going to blow up in his face. It's why I've called it a Harriet Myers moment. I mean, it's an unforced mistake. He made the mistake totally on his own and has put the entire administration into a position I never thought would happen.
I have never seen our country more outraged about this kind of a story in all my life. Let's not compare this with 9/11, where we had a clear-cut, immediate, imminent danger, and we had we had people that we wanted to go after. Strangely enough, by the way, I have a group of people from academia on tomorrow who have a different perspective of 9/11. We're going to do that program tomorrow.
That's going to be very interesting. I'm going to listen.
In this particular case, though, I mean, Americans overall, skewing all political boundaries, are outraged by this.
Well, you're right. You know, when I wrote Atomic Iran, talked about an atomic 9/11, I said that the way it would happen would be Iran would make a nuclear weapon, an improvised nuclear device, and they would get it into the United States in a container brought in through a port and delivered in a truck to where it could be assembled if it needed to be, and then driven into the major of a major city like New York City and detonated. And I describe minute by minute what happens with even a low-yield, simple gun-type uranium device that would devastate New York, small enough to be easily packed in a semi-truck. And, you know, the only thing good I can think coming out of this, George, is that finally Americans are going to wake up to the fact that our borders and our ports are totally porous.
Maybe if we can keep this up, we'll put all this under a microscope.
Well, that's right. And, you know, 5% of the containers coming into the United States are inspected. Now, in Hong Kong, that number is closer to 95%. If they can do that in Hong Kong, why can't we get the technology to do it here? I think Homeland Security is also completely asleep at the switch. And, you know, it exposes the Bush administration, whose major claim to fame is the war on terrorism. And now it makes the Bush administration look like either there's some kind of a private deal, follow the money going on at Treasury or with Cheney. That's all going to have to be looked at now. Or they're just, you know, they've just completely missed this one, where they're getting the United Arab Emirates with a history of working with terrorists, including Iran, and no guarantee that they may not have, you know, an operative among the group that comes in. Yes, they're just going to work on the containers, but an operative in Dubai Ports World working with the containers is going to learn all the security procedures of any port they're in.
Maybe they figured we can get this through, and that talk show host guy probably won't catch it.
Well, you know, I think George, you have caught it. And I think it's important that you do, because this story needs to continue to be emphasized in the next few days, when Congress is going to say to the president, we've got enough votes to override your veto. And it's going to be amazing to American conservatives if the first veto by George Bush is on this issue of Homeland Security, where he's opening up our ports to the United Arab Emirates government to manage the container operations.
I still think someone above Snow or Sanborn or anybody else brokered this deal, Jerry.
Well, you know, that's going to have to be looked at, George. There's articles being written by some of my friends in Washington who I know quite well. Bill Murray just came out with one I saw this evening, in which he's speculating that, you know, this is really Cheney's doing. And Cheney is really concerned with our balance of payments and free markets, and he doesn't want anything economic to impose a penalty on terrorists. And if that's the case, that's going to be very damaging for the administration as well. But none of this had to get raised. There's no reason why we should be going out of our way to get a United Arab Emirates group owned by the government, 100%, operating the container operations of our ports. The exact methodology that I and others have described is the way to get an improvised nuclear device into the United States.
As you know, we have 361 ports in the United States. We're talking about six along the eastern coast and down in the south for a little bit. But these are pretty big ports, aren't they?
These are some of the major ports. You know, you've got Philadelphia, you've got New York, you've got New Jersey.
New Orleans.
I mean, these are ports that are major ports through which a lot of traffic comes. And if you're going to try to get, you know, an improvised nuclear device or a dirty bomb or anything else smuggled in, you're not going to smuggle it in through a small port.
Is that what concerns you the most about this whole deal, Jerry?
Yes, absolutely, George. I think it's an open door to any terrorist, any criminal mentality, saying, oh, good, well, I'm just going to go over to the United Arab Emirates and apply for a job with the Dubai Ports Authority and go into the United States ports and learn everything. And while I'm doing that, I'll be just as much of a sleeper as the guys they sent over here to learn flying lessons. You know, don't teach me to land. I just want to learn to take off and fly the plane. Well, these guys are going to say, well, I just want to know, I want to work for your Port Authority group, and I'm really concerned about security because I want to make sure we handle all the containers correctly. Any criminal mentality is going to see through this in a minute and apply for a job.
All I know, Jerry, is that I hope the Congress finally wakes up and comes up and does the right thing.
Well, George, I commend you for developing the story. I think it's extremely important. And I know there are people listening tonight that are upset. And if they do write their congressman and phone Washington, it's going to make a difference.
Absolutely. Jerry, thanks for being part to give at least your perspective in this situation, this strange situation.
Always an honor to be with you. Thank you, George.
That's Jerry Corsi. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And believe me, sometimes I wish we were just talking to Jerry about Black Gold Stranglehold and our theories on gold and peak oil and in gold oil, as we say. But not tonight. Now, in a moment, our next guest will be Douglas Hagman. We're going to talk about the terrorism aspect of this entire situation. Plus, Douglas has uncovered up there in the, up in the area of the East Coast, the possibility of a terrorist training camp. We'll talk with him about that as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And next up, terrorist expert Douglas Hagman. We're going to talk about several cases, the possibility of terrorism coming through these U.S. ports, and also Douglas has uncovered a possible terrorist training camp on the East Coast. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Several Bush administration security officials are expressing their concerns now that terrorists could infiltrate seaports through a United Arab Emirates company that is vying to manage these six U.S. ports. Intelligence and security officials opposed to the deal with the Dubai Ports World said ports are vulnerable to the entry of terrorists or illicit weapons because of the large number of containers that enter the U.S. territory, regardless of who manages them. On the line with us now, Douglas Hagman, HomelandSecurityUS.com. Several issues to talk with Douglas about this half hour. Douglas, how are you? Are you feeling well, my friend?
Absolutely, feeling better than ever. And George, it's an honor to be included in such an array of distinguished guests that you had tonight. This is just fabulous.
Do you share the concerns now of some security officials that terrorists could come through seaports?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've got... America's seaports have long been recognized as strategically sensitive assets and certainly most vulnerable to the top terrorist threats. And they've been named, especially the six major ports that we are discussing, have been named as potential terrorist targets and enviable targets at that. You know, of the 361 across our 95,000-mile shorelines, those six are very strategically important. And I think in this particular case, to outsource our port operations, even though it's virtually outsourced currently, but to outsource those operations to a country that for the last 4.5 years has been virtually, they've continued to maintain aid and abet terrorism, I think is irresponsible. It's recklessly irresponsible to do so. People have to remember that, and I think some of your guests had mentioned this, that the 10 of the 19 hijackers carried documentation and identification originating from Dubai. The FBI confirmed that the money for the 9/11 operations was transferred through the United Arab Emirates banking system. The Treasury Department...
And this all went through the 9/11 Commission, by the way.
Exactly. And the Treasury Department... they complained about the lack of cooperation that they had received from the government of the United Arab Emirates with respect to tracking down the finances of Osama bin Laden and some of the hijackers. And you know, one of the hijackers steered the United Airlines flight into the South Tower of the World Trade Center, Marwan al-Sheikhi. He was born in the United Arab Emirates. So this is not a country that is unfamiliar with terrorism, although they are supposedly recognized as an ally of our country in the war on terror. And despite their westernization, they still adhere to the orthodox Islamic theocracy, which is a threat to this safety and security of this country.
There's something rotten going on here, Douglas.
Yes, sir.
Can't put my finger on it, but there's something that just doesn't feel right.
Absolutely. I think it's completely irresponsible. I share the feelings of security experts like Frank Gaffney and others who really likened this to the situation in the aftermath of 9/11. People would be rightfully outraged if the United States government had decided to contract out airport security to the United Arab Emirates. I would say the same thing here. This is an outsourcing of proportions that you know, looking back on this historically, I would hope that we would, if this is not stopped stopped, period, I hope that we're not looking back at this saying, you know, what were we thinking, especially if we lose a city or a port or multiple ports, which I think is a clear possibility.
Well, Douglas, in addition to this, we've been monitoring your website, Homeland Security US, and you've got an incredible story about the possibility of a terrorist training camp in the United States.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this thing.
Well, you know, it came to our attention that Jamaat al-Fukra, which is a known terrorist organization that originated in Pakistan, originated by Sheikh Mubarak Jalani, which happens to be, if that name sounds familiar, Sheikh Jalani was the person and his associates were the people that Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl set out to interview when he was kidnapped and savagely beheaded. We have found that Jamaat al-Fukra has a distinct presence in this country and has had a presence in this country since approximately 1980 when Sheikh Jalani came to Brooklyn and opened up a headquarters for Jamaat al-Fukra in the western portion of the Catskill Mountains in New York State. Personally, myself and a couple of other investigators from the Northeast Intelligence Network did some investigation, covert investigation, and limited surveillance of this location in Hancock, New York, very rural location, found that it is a conclave of about 50 to 60 trailer-type homes, mobile homes.
How many people might be involved there?
Anywhere between 150 and 300 people, depending upon the time. The attendance fluctuates, but it's relatively consistent.
And isn't it true that Americans who are living around that region are petrified?
Yes, they are. I spoke to neighbors, and they said that these people own this mountain. It's actually on a mountainside, and they're afraid. They have heard automatic gunfire coming from this compound.
And we're not talking about simple target practice.
No, we're not. There is a school bus located within this compound that the windows are blown out of the school bus. They're not broken out. They were blown out. Bullet holes in the side of a school bus. And this comes in the wake of a recently funded Department of Homeland Security program that is training bus drivers now to look for potential terrorist attacks, to you know how to avoid them, and also to correspond with a central reporting agency to report the suspicious incidents.
With this possibly going on with known terrorists in that region, why hasn't ATF or the FBI raided this spot?
George, they have the Department of Treasury has raided the businesses that compose or comprise some portions of this camp. As a matter of fact,
when did this happen?
This happened back in 2003, and prior to 9/11, I have to say that the FBI had. We had done some investigation, and there were some indictments made from this camp. But at this particular point, neighbors are wondering what's happening because they don't feel that there's anyone looking at this investigation.
Well, that's what I mean. They raided them 3 years ago.
Right.
What about today?
Well, you know, again, the neighbors are saying, they're asking the same questions. They're saying, what's going on? You know, why is this, in a post-9/11 world, George, why is this allowed to continue? And this is not the only camp. We found that these jamaats, or these encampments, there's about 20 to 24 of them throughout the United States, containing people that have no desire to assimilate into Western culture. Our country allows these people the freedom to live in that regard, in that type of that lifestyle. And these people are out they have the stated objective to destroy our country.
Tell me at least we're aware of all these places.
Oh, we are.
Okay.
You know, we are aware of them, yes. And I think to a large extent there are investigations that are ongoing, but law enforcement has been pretty much reactionary as opposed to proactive, especially on the county and state levels. What the federal government is doing with respect to these camps is a different story. They might have different levels of infiltration, but that at this point here, there's been no evidence to suggest that that there's anything really actively going on in terms of federal investigation. Of course, I would not be privy to that, nor should I be. But, you know, by this program and by our reports, hopefully we can shed some light on these activities and perhaps get some interest to, you know, shine the spotlight on these locations and make the public aware and also assist the federal government in showing them what's going on.
By the way, a lot of people are fast-blasting me now, Douglas, saying that George is not just six ports. There's six commercial ports, but there are two military ports involved, Beaumont, Texas, Corpus
yes.
Christi. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. I failed to mention that.
My God.
By virtue of a extended contractual agreement with P&O, the ports in Beaumont and Corpus Christi, Texas, will be under the control of this foreign entity of the United Arab Emirates. The key thing with this is that military assets are going to be under the management, our U.S. military assets, tanks, armaments, by this company, by virtue of an extended contractual agreement that will be inherited through this buyout.
So shipping of our tanks and things that put them on ships, send them out or sell them, would go through this company?
Yes. Yes, absolutely, and people are missing that point. These two.
So what if they change the address from some friendly nation and they stick Iran on there. You know, this P.O. box, send the tank there.
Well, again, you know, that could happen, but again, it's totally irresponsible. And this just shows that, you know, more than these six ports are being affected, and we are essentially, I think this is totally insane to allow this to happen. And I've got to commend you. You were on the tip of the, you led the charge on this tip of the sword with this issue long before anyone else. And you know, this is tremendous. And I think that I think everyone should be outraged, as they should have been for the last 4.5 years, that we're dealing with a country that is implicitly abetting terrorism, if they're not explicitly doing so.
Well, you know what, Douglas? All I want, first and foremost, is the truth. I want all of us as Americans to be told the truth, to be told what the heck is going on. And, you know, I want a place that's safe for my kids and my grandchildren. You do too.
Sure.
And I'm getting tired of us as Americans of being taken advantage of. And I think it's time we put our foot down, we start to take our country back. And I've got to applaud a lot of members of Congress from both parties who are beginning to stand up saying, you know what, this is wrong, and I could care less what the political affiliation of this administration happens to be. This is wrong, and we're not going to let this happen. And I hope to God that they're smart enough to follow through with this. I hope it just doesn't die on the vine, and then this thing happens, because it's more than just this one issue. How much more are they going to try to outsource and whittle away of this country?
That's very true. I mean, you know, we are what we do today is going to have a dramatic impact on our children and their children. And I think if we act responsibly today, people just fail to realize that we are at war today. You know, there is really no feeling that I get in talking with people that this country is at war. War has been declared on us. And every decision that we make, especially those with regard to our sensitive strategic assets, like our seaports, and everything associated with that, is so extremely important. Why would we allow allow anyone to oversee the management of such strategic assets? Why are we outsourcing this today when we are fully capable of doing it from within? It just does not make sense to me whatsoever.
It's shocking.
Yes, it is.
What happens next, in your opinion, Douglas? Do you think this is going to get stopped, or do you think it's going to go through?
Well, boy, I wish I had a crystal ball on this. I do
Me
know
too.
That the, you know, just based on the public reaction, and also the reaction that really transcends party lines and affiliations, I think that this probably will go on a slower track and maybe even become derailed. And that's what I'm hoping for.
Victory for us if that happens.
You know what? And exactly. And again, you know, it started really at a grassroots level with your show. And I have to say that because really that was the first time I had really heard about this particular, the extent of this purchase or this buyout. So, you know, yes, I'd like to think that we are going to come to some sort of an agreement here where we can take a breath, everybody just relax and take a look at this from a logical and from a security standpoint, especially in looking at this through the prism of the attacks of September 11th, 2001.
How are we doing overall as a nation to combat terrorism? Osama bin Laden heard on tape a few weeks ago, Douglas, saying, look, we're planning a major attack on U.S. soil. A lot of us thought, well, are they going to use the Super Bowl as an event? That didn't happen. What's going on? What do your sources tell you?
Multiple conversations following an intelligence summit that took place in Washington, D.C. I spoke with a lot of people that attended that summit. Unfortunately, I was unable to do so. But the consensus is that we are in trouble to the extent that we have been warned of these impending attacks. There is a state of operational readiness, or the final preparation of whatever we are going to see next, or whatever they're going to throw at us next, in terms of attacks within this country. Most likely it's going to be a series of attacks as opposed to one. There's a desire to obviously eclipse the symbolic nature of 9/11 and also the higher body count, make it more much more dramatic than the attacks of 9/11. That's what we're hearing. There is a concurrent with that, there's also been a renewed effort at the at the field agent level. You're seeing multiple raids across the country. Matter of fact, one today, raids in Louisiana and New York of various retail outlets.
And did you hear about the truck training school in Missouri?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've gone from aircraft training schools or pilot training schools now to CDL locations that train people for commercial driver's licenses. And that industry needs regulation, needs investigation, just simply because there is so much fraud and document identification fraud going on. There was an arrest of a man just 2 weeks ago, Michael Reynolds, who had has a commercial driver's license, wanted to purchase propane trucks and drive them. And this is a guy that you would not normally
think, an American,
exactly. You would not, by looking at him, you would think that he almost has the aura of a military or police officer. But he wanted to detonate propane trucks on the pipelines, the Trans-American pipelines, and other refineries.
We should try him as a traitor and hang him when convicted.
Absolutely. You know, so this is what we're seeing now. We're seeing really the overall consensus here is there are attacks that are going to be launched at strategic locations. And by the way, our ports are very strategic. You know, they're close in proximity to major population centers. They're choke points if something would happen there. For crying out loud, you know, what a nightmare. That would interrupt commerce throughout the United States. So I think we are seeing, and we will be seeing over the next couple of weeks, this I could tell you, more raids, more arrests, more indictments, and kind of a larger offensive against the different terror cells inside the United States in an effort to disrupt whatever the next attacks might be.
Well, you keep us busy on Homeland Security U.S. What are you working on now, Douglas?
Well, we're looking into a couple of things. The training camps inside the United States is a huge item. We are extending the investigation well beyond Jemaat el-Fukra, and we will be exposing other locations inside the United States that are not only sensitive or facilitating terrorism operations, but are actually actively training U.S. terrorists. And that is going to be forthcoming, and it's going to be quite revealing and quite surprising.
How's my buddy Tom Barley doing at the WBEN in Buffalo?
Tom's doing great. Spoke with him on the radio today, and he extends his best wishes. He wanted me to tell you that.
Hey, he gives me some pretty good tips every once in a while.
He's plugged in, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
he really is.
He does a great job down there, and it's a great affiliate. Buffalo supports this program hugely across the New York area.
You've got a lot of listeners out of Buffalo, Niagara Falls, and Western New York. Absolutely.
Maybe I'll become the mayor of Buffalo one day. What do you think?
You know what, George? Buffalo needs a good mayor, and I think you'd be a great one.
We've got the votes.
I'm
going to stay on coast to coast. Hey, Douglas, thanks for your work. You know, I know in all seriousness, this is a story that I hope doesn't go away, and I hope finally once, that the good heads prevail and they at least stop this. Not because there's anything wrong with these people. You know, I come from a Middle Eastern background as well. You know, these people are kind, fair people, but there's just too much going on right now. They need to understand American sensitivity.
Yes, sir. And you know, that's a very respectful way of saying it. And I agree with you on that. Wrong time, wrong place at this particular point.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Douglas. Up next, my friends, it's Alex Jones. Get ready for this coast-to-coast ride. And then in the latter half of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to chat with Alex and myself. We'll be back on Coast to Coast AM.